Beloved Bhagwan, after his first instructions from his master, Nangaku, on the meaning of the Dharma, Matsu felt as if he were drinking the most exquisite nectar. After bowing to the master, Matsu asked him, "How must one be attuned to the formless samadhi?" The master said, "When you cultivate the way of interior wisdom, it is like sowing seed. When I expound to you the essentials of Dharma, it is like the showers from heaven. As you are receptive to the teaching, you are destined to see the tower." Matsu again asked, "Since the Tao is beyond colour and form, how can it be seen?" The master said, "The Dharma eye of your interior spirit is capable of perceiving the Tao. So it is with the formless samadhi. Is there still making and unmaking?" Matsu asked. To this the master replied, "If one sees the Tao from the standpoint of making and unmaking, or gathering and scattering, one does not really see the Tao. Listen to my gatha. The ground of the no mind contains many seeds which will all sprout when heavenly showers come. The flower of samadhi is beyond colour and form. How can there be any more mutability?" It is said that at this, Matsu was truly enlightened, his mind being transcended from the world of phenomena. He attended upon his master for a full 10 years. During this period, he delved deeper and deeper into meditation.
Manisa. Nangaku, a great master in his own authority, is working on a greater master, Matsu, who is just a seed right now, but contains a great Buddha. You are also seeds . It is up to you to remain closed, then you will never know your ultimate nature as a Buddha. A little courage, a little opening, a little dying of the cover of the seed, and the Buddha starts sprouting in you. You cannot blame to the climate. The rains are there. The clouds have even entered into the camp. They are just passing before my eyes. So close are the clouds. But the strange thing is, that the closer the clouds are, the seed becomes more afraid. Afraid of the unknown, afraid of one never knows what is going to be outside. Hidden behind a cover, the seed feels safer, secure. On the path of Zen, you have to learn these important words: openness, a joy in insecurity, a challenge from the unknown. Has always to be welcomed. That is the way of growing up. Most of the people in the world whom William Reich has called the little man, die as little men. Although their destiny was not to be a little man, William Reich is perfectly right to call the masses and the crowd, listen, little men. But he was absolutely wrong, because he could not see that hidden in the little man is the greatest Buddha. He simply condemned the little man, because all the little men were condemning him. He was a genius, not a Buddha, but an intellectual giant, and has been condemned by the crowds, finally forced behind the walls of a madhouse, and he was talking immensely sensible things. He was bringing a new territory to be explored. But those all afraid people, afraid of the unknown, afraid of losing the security and the safety of the bank balance, forced him into a madhouse, and he was not mad, because in his madhouse days he has written his best books. They are evidence that he was not mad. But the politicians and the crowd and the government all conspired to force him to live in a madhouse. They all laughed about his immensely valuable discoveries about human energy. Naturally, he was angry. So when he wrote the book, Listen, Little Man, it was not out of compassion. It was out of reaction. They have done harm to him. He could at least condemn them. His book is beautiful in describing the little man, but the essential part of the little man is the seed, his potentiality, which he completely forgets in his anger. Otherwise, he was very close to become enlightened, but his anger, his reactions, his incapacity to see the point that the people are bound to condemn you, your being a genius is enough reason for your condemnation. They are bound to crucify you, and you have to understand it as a natural course of things. But he could not take it in as a natural course of things. He could not understand that it is something that has to happen to every genius who opens doors of insecurity. And because of this great cloud of anger, he was completely blind to see that the little man is a Buddha hidden deep down as a seed. Nangaku is instructing Matsu, after his first instructions from his master Nangaku on the meaning of the Dharma, Matsu felt as if he was drinking the most exquisite nectar. After bowing to the master, Matsu asked him, "How must one be attuned to the formless samadhi?" The first thing to understand is the meaning of the Dharma. Unfortunately, the Sanskrit word Dharma, or the Pali word which Buddha used, Dhamma, have been wrongly translated as religion. By the theologians and by scholars, they have been translated as the law, the ultimate law. Both have missed the point. Dharma is not religion. In fact, if you go to the roots of the words, religion means that which binds you. And dharma means that which frees you. They are absolutely contrary to each other. Dharma simply means your intrinsic nature. It is not written in scriptures, and nobody can tell you what is your dharma. You have to find it yourself. This is a great dignity conferred on the individual by existence, that you don't have to live on borrowed knowledge. The living source of life is just flowing close by. Why not drink it and be quenched? Matasu says, after understanding the meaning of dharma, he felt as if he were drinking the most exquisite nectar. The deeper you go in your meditations, closer you will come to the eternal stream of your life sources. It is pure nectar, because it declares your immortality. It declares your eternity. It declares that death is a fiction. It has never happened and will never happen to anyone. One only changes the house. Gets into another form, or maybe into the formless existence. Matazu's statement that he felt as if he were drinking the most exquisite nectar shows his tremendous understanding. He is very new in meditation. He is too young. But age has nothing to do with your realization. It is not that when you get old, you will be able to become a Buddha easily. On the contrary, the older you become, the more difficult it becomes for you to drop your lifelong habits, concepts, ideologies. Just 2 years before, Pope the Pollock was in India, and he was surprised to see that the very poor and the orphans which have been converted to Christianity, were doing the same in their churches, burning incense, bringing flowers for Jesus Christ. He could not believe what the priests are doing, because these people are doing exactly what they used to do in their temples. Only instead of Krishna, now Christ is replaced. Everything is the same. But the priests told him that we have to make few considerations, few compromises. These people cannot understand a religion without incense, without flowers, And he conceded that for Indian Christians it is okay as you become old. It becomes very difficult to change your ideology, your lifelong belief. It becomes hardened. The old man becomes hard. And in the same way, everything around him becomes hard. The best situation to grow into your potential is the childhood. Next to it is your youth. Most probably, the childhood is bound to be spoiled by the parents, by the priests. The authentic religion has to depend on the youth, because the youth has a certain rebelliousness natural to him. He can rebel against the whole past without any guilt. He can clean away his heart from all the old dead scriptures and statues. And the challenge of the unknown stirs his heart. He wants to accept the greatest challenge, and this is the greatest challenge in life, to allow your seat to open to the unknown skies, wind, sun, rain. One never knows what is going to happen. There is nobody to guide the seat. There are no scriptures for the seed to read. The seed is taking a risk by coming out. And do you understand, the risk is not small. The risk is exactly a death. The seed has to die in the soil, only then the sprouts of the potentiality of the seed will start growing. Perhaps it may become a rose flower or a lotus or any kind of flower. It does not matter. What matters is flowering, not the name of the flower. Even a wild flower is as beautiful as the most precious rose. They are brothers in one way. They both have come to their flowering. They have both enjoyed the joy of growth. They both have seen with their own eyes what was hidden in their seed. They both have taken the same risk and the same challenge. In fact, it is the death and resurrection. the seed dies and resurrects into many flowers, into many fruits, into many seeds. It is said that a single seed can make the whole earth green. Just one plant is not its potential. On that one plant, there will come thousands of seeds again, each seed again carrying thousand seeds. Just a single seed can fill the whole earth with absolute greenness. Such tremendous possibility in a small seed. And you are a living seed, conscious. The most precious thing in existence is with you, consciousness. The seed is groping in the dark, it still finds the way, and you are conscious, you have a little light, but you don't move from your position. You remain a little man. In fact, you hate all those who have gone to the other source, because their very going condemns you that you have failed to fulfill your own destiny. Matazu, after bowing to the master, asked him, "How must one be attuned to the formless samadhi?" Because the master must have said to him that unless you become attuned with existence in utter silence, you cannot know the Dhamma, the very principle of life and existence. His inquiry is that of an honest seeker. He will not believe. He loved what was said. He felt it as if it is exquisite nectar, but still there are things to be settled. His question is not a question of a student. His question is a question of a would-be master. How must one be attuned to formless samadhi? He cuts all unnecessary questions, comes exactly to the right thing, how one should be attuned to the formless samadhi. Samadhi is a Sanskrit word, very beautiful in its meaning. It comes from a root which means when there is no question and no answer. When your silence is so profound that you don't even have the answer, questions are left far away, but you don't have even the answer, such innocence, which is just silent, is called samadhi. And in this samadhi, you can fall in tune with the heartbeat of the universe. Only in samadhi you can become one with the whole. There is no other way. Every day what we are doing in the name of meditation is moving towards samadhi. Meditation is the beginning and samadhi is the end. His question is that of a potential Buddha. He is not asking about non-essentials, just the very essential. The Master said, when you cultivate the way of interior wisdom, it is like sowing seed. When I expound to you the essentials of Dharma, it is like the showers from heaven. As you are receptive to the teaching, you are destined to see the Tao. Tao is Chinese for the same we call samadhi. Japanese call satori. Chinese call Tao. Tao is perhaps the best of all these expressions because it is not part of language. It simply indicates something inexpressible. Something that you can know but you cannot say. Something that you can live but you cannot explain. Something that you can dance, you can sing, but you cannot utter a single word about it. You can be it. You can be the expression of Tao, but you cannot say what it is that you are expressing. Matazu again asks, since the Tao is beyond color and form, how can it be seen? You have to understand this dialogue very deeply. Because it will give you the right direction, what has to be asked. There are thousands of things to ask, but the essentials are very few. And unless you start asking the essentials, you will not come close to the truth. As Nangaku said about Tao, Matazu immediately asked, since the Tao is beyond color and beyond form, how can it be seen? You are saying that if you enter into samadhi, you will see the Tao. The master said, the dharma eye of your interior spirit is capable of perceiving the Tao, so it is with the formless samadhi. It is because of this reason the East has to develop a concept of third eye. These two eyes can see only the form, the color, but they cannot see the formless and the colorless. For the formless and colorless, they are blind. In samadhi, you close these eyes, and a new perceptivity, which can be metaphorically called the third eye, arises in you, a new sensitivity which can feel and see what is not possible for your outer senses. The dharma eye, that is the third eye of your interior spirit, is capable of perceiving the Tao. When I say to you in meditations, go deeper, look deeper, I am trying in every way so that your third eye, which has been remained dormant, opens up. Matasu still asks, is there still making and unmaking? Can we do something inside? Can we make inside a Buddha? Is there still some creativity inside? A very profound question. To this the master replied, if one sees the Tao from the standpoint of making and unmaking, or gathering and scattering, one does not really see the Tao. Listen to my gatha. He says that as far as your inner world is concerned, your Buddha is already there. You don't have to make it. Everything as it should be is in your inner world. I am reminded of a Russian scientist, Kirlian, who has brought a new vision to the objective scientists. Its implications are immense. He was himself a great photographer, and he went on performing and refining his lenses. His whole idea was that if in a seed something is hidden as a potential, perhaps with a better lens, the photograph of the potential can be caught. It was a very strange idea. But scientists and mystics and philosophers and poets all are a little bit crazy. Everybody persuaded him that don't do such nonsense. How you can see the rose in the seed? He said, if it is going to be, then it must be present in some way. Perhaps our eyes are not capable to see it. And finally he succeeded. He managed to create lenses which will take the photograph of what is going to happen in the future. He will put the seed in front of his camera and the photograph will come of a rose flower. And then he will wait for the seed to die into the soil. And it was one of the miracles of modern genius that when the real rose will come, he will be exactly the same as the photograph. He has caught future in his net. And if it is true about the seed, then he became convinced that it can be used in many things. For example, now in Russian hospitals, Kirlian photography has become an absolute must. People come just to be checked that is there any possibility of any disease in the future. His lenses, they have even more refined now after his death. A whole school of Kirlian photographers have been working on it. They can see at least 6 months ahead. If you are going to be sick after 6 months, your photograph will show that after 6 months you will be having cancer. No other way to find it out but it can be treated, although it has not become manifest. It is a tremendous blessing to medicine. We can cure people before they become sick. What we see with our eyes is not the all. Even in the outside world, our eyes have limitations. Kirlian photography has gone beyond our eyes into the objective world. In the same way, the third eye opens in the inner world and brings you your whole potentiality in its fullness. You don't have to do anything. You have just to recognize it. A Buddha is not made. A Buddha is only remembered. Nangaku said, "Listen to my gatha." That is an ancient way. Gatha means my poetry. What I could manage to say in prose, I have said. Now listen to my poetry. Something that I have not been able to say in prose can be said in poetry. The ground of no mind contains many seeds which will all sprout when heavenly showers come. They have come. And now it is up to you to take the challenge. The flower of samadhi is beyond color and form. How can there be any more mutability? It is said that at this Matazu was truly enlightened, his mind being transcended from the world of phenomena. He attended upon his master for a full 10 years. During this period, he developed deeper and deeper into meditation. Kanzan wrote, "In my house there is a cave, and in the cave there is nothing at all. Pure and wonderfully empty, resplendent with a light like the sun, a meal of greens will do for this old body. A ragged coat will cover this phantom form. Let 1,000 saints appear before me. I have the Buddha of heavenly truth." Once you have looked into your inner cave and found the light, the life, the very source of your being, then the so-called saints don't mean anything. They are just moralists. Following a certain system of morality, beliefs, but they don't have the truth. If you have the truth, then even 1,000 saints cannot weigh more than your Buddha. Then your Buddha is the ultimate, and it is not borrowed. You have discovered it. Manisha has asked, "Beloved Bhagwan, I love the expression, take one step towards Allah and He will come running 1,000 steps towards you. It seems to suggest that receptivity is not a totally inactive waiting but requires a certain participation. Even to receive a flower, does not one need to hold out one's hand? Or am I on the wrong track again?" Yes, Manisha, you are on a wrong track again. That saying comes from Mohammedanism. Take one step towards Allah and He will come running. He will take 1,000 steps towards you. But in the world of Zen, there is no Allah. And as far as your inside is concerned, just take one step and you are the Allah. Nobody comes running. On the contrary, you come to a standstill. Just one step inside, that Mohammedan saying is still about the outside God. You take one step and God will come running towards you. That kind of God does not exist. So don't unnecessarily waste your step. Save it. You will need it to go in. And the moment you go one step in, you are the Allah. In the world of Zen, that kind of statement is not applicable at all. The clouds have come. Really, with tremendous urgency, this year Pune is going to be flooded. Without even Shankaracharya committing a suicide, just the laughter of 10,000 Buddhas is enough to call all the clouds of the world. They don't need any passport, any visa. They don't have to pass any customs office. They are the free Buddhas moving in the sky. And when they see 10,000 Buddhas gathered, naturally they come running. Particularly at the time when I am going to tell you the jokes. Where is Sardar Gurdayal Singh? Just laugh loudly. Because this book is going to be dedicated to Sardar Gurdayal Singh, the only man in history who laughs before the joke is told. What a trust! You should learn the trust from Sardar Gurdayal Singh. Maggie McTavish dies and leaves old Hemis a widower. It is such a relief for him that he rustled excitedly round to see Mr. Tomb, the undertaker. "How much to bury my wife?" asked Hemis. £500, replies Tomb, rubbing his hands together. "500? Splutters Hemis, clutching his purse. "Can't you do it for less?" "Well," replies Mr. Tomb, "the cheapest I can manage is £300. "My God," wails Hemis, counting out his money, "I almost wish she was still alive." Magic Mushroom Melvin, the old hippie, is busy making lunch for his old buddy, Buffalo Grass. "Wow, man," says Melvin, stepping back from the sink and sitting down to smoke a few reefers. "That is the wildest recipe I have ever tried." "Groovy, man," says Buffalo Grass in a cloud of smoke. "What is it?" "It is salad, man," says Melvin. "Hey, cool, man, salad," agrees Buffalo Grass. "How do you make it?" "Well, it is really easy, man," says Melvin. "You cut up lettuce, tomatoes, cucumbers and carrots. Then you throw in some LSD, stand back and watch the salad toss itself. Dilli and Delhi are identical twins who live in a small town near the sea. Dilli is married and Delhi is single, but keeps a small rowing boat. One day Dilli's wife dies, and a few days later, Delhi's rowing boat sinks. Walking in the street a week later, Delhi meets Mrs. Goodball, the bishop's wife. Mrs. Goodball mistakes Delhi, the boatman, for Dilli, who has just lost his wife. "I am sorry to hear about your terrible loss," says Mrs. Goodball. "Ah, thank you very much," replies Delhi, the boatman. "But I am not sorry at all. She was a rotten old thing from the start. She had a huge crack in the front of her and a big hole behind, which kept getting bigger every time I used it. She stank of old fish and used to leak water all the time. Her bottom was really badly scratched up, and whenever there was wind, it was not safe to go near her. Last week, three men came around looking for some fun, so I hired her out to them. I told them to take it easy with her, but the three idiots all tried to get into her at the same time. Of course, she split from back to front. Now she is gone, and I am very happy about it. Mrs. Goodball faints. Nivedana. Close your eyes and feel your body to be completely frozen. Look inwards with absolute urgency, deeper and deeper, until you reach the source of your very being. It is very close, just one step, and you are the Buddha. Such a beautiful evening, and the dancing rains rejoicing in your silence rejoicing in your samadhi. These cloud Buddhas have come from so far away. Don't let them down. Deeper and deeper. There is no need to fear. It is your own space. And it is your own birthright to be a Buddha. To make it absolutely clear that you are not the body nor the mind, but just a witness, Nivedano, relax and just be a witness. This witnessing is another name of the Buddha. Witnessing makes you an empty mirror, reflecting everything without getting identified. And this is the miracle of meditation. It gives you freedom. It gives you the beyond. Gather the experience, the fragrance, because the time is close that you will be called back. taste the nectar the eternally running stream of your life, let it sink deep in your every fiber, because it is going to be 24-hour life style. Living or dead, you have to remain as a Buddha. Nivedana, come back, but come back as a Buddha with a samadhi, with a feel of the nectar. Sit down for a few moments just to recollect the experience where you have been, what you have been. Every day it has to become deeper and deeper. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, Bhagwan.
Can we celebrate the Buddhas?
Yes, Bhagwan.
The light.